You know, I just fell down. I blacked out, fell down. And you know, when I woke up, it's a pool of blood on the floor. Pretty sure my nose is broken, but.
All of that occurred away from the action, and Gene Katie just a little upset with what's happened so far.
Robinson around Ostertag.
Knocking it down again is Jawan Johnson, 3 for 3 from the field.
You're listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat, a part of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Purdue Basketball Beat. With me is Andy and Anish. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
He's back.
He's back. We thought he was dead.
Yeah, no, it turns out he just has, like, 8 weeks of vacation that he uses.
Excuse me, guys. I'm going to go vacation in the Caribbean.
It's okay.
For 4 weeks.
Jay Money from the site was on vacation, too. So apparently people just take vacations in the middle of February.
We went to Disney World. Thank you very much.
Vacations.
You both went to Disney World? Because wait. Is Jay in Disney World?
Are you Jay? I talked to Jay before, and you don't sound like him.
This is like the end of Fight Club.
Wait, maybe he went to Disneyland. No, I think he was down in Florida for some. Like,
oh man, is he Brazilian? Because if he's Brazilian, there were a lot of Brazilians in Disney World. So we might have seen him.
Probably. I'll ask him.
Do we have to censor that? I feel like we have to censor that.
Censor like, Brazilian?
There's nothing wrong with it, but it just kind of feels weird.
This is a bonus episode, and anything goes.
No, this is going to turn out to be like the podcast that Andy and I did with Jay and Dowd 2 years ago, where we recorded for 2.5 hours and had a
we couldn't use any of it. It was all just filler noises.
How's Disney World though?
It was good. It's exhausting. I'm out of shape and it's a lot of walking. My plantar fasciitis was acting up.
That's terrible.
It's hard to say.
I'm so sorry that you had to walk on vacation.
Yeah, man, it must be tough.
Well,
hey, let's talk about Purdue.
I'd like to talk about Disney World a little more.
You want to talk about the FastPass system? No.
Yes. I love the FastPass system. It's totally worth it. 100,000% worth it.
Yeah, it makes me a slob. I don't wait on lines anymore. I'm not gonna wait for 20 minutes. All right,
listen. We only have like 10 listeners, and you guys are just killing those.
We think we just lost them. Okay. Now that it's just us.
Let's talk about the Brazilians at Disney World. So Purdue, doing good stuff. How about that?
We're not bad, man. Turns out we got some fight left.
A little bit.
Yeah, I was particularly excited about this conversation today because I've always tried to inject a little bit of optimism, and you two Scrooges have been quick to tell me that I'm crazy. So,
that how this works?
I don't think that's how this works. I mean,
this is not how any of this works. No, but I just would like to see how you guys are going to rain on the parade this week. So let's. So before we look in the future, should we talk about the Northwestern game first?
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, I think this is a game. Even last week when we recorded this podcast, I thought we kind of overlooked it. Northwestern always gives us fits, and Chris Collins is getting that program back together. I think he'll succeed. He was like rumored to be one of the people in line eventually for Coach K's job, and I think like coming from Duke to Northwestern is a good fit, and I think he'll do really well. Right now, he doesn't have the pieces, but they usually play very hard, and I thought that they played us pretty closely. I thought they played us a little like too closely because I think you know we should have, even though it finished 68-60, it probably should have been more. We should have been a little more offensively explosive. And that had me worried about Ohio State. Holy, what? Did someone sneeze? Just sort of 6 weeks on vacation and you still can't get this right.
No, but I agree with your assessment. I never feel comfortable going into Northwestern. And thank God that backdoor offense is gone, because that was a lot like playing a team, kind of like a football where you play a team that plays the option and you just can't prepare for it.
Yeah.
So.
And Alex Ola, I think last year had dropped 18 points or something like that on AJ Hammons, and it looked like AJ was out for revenge.
Was that the game where Hammons missed the start because of a disciplinary issue, or is that a different game?
You might be right on that, or like he missed the team bus or something stupid, yeah, like that.
Something stupid, and then got off the team, kind of got off to a bad start, and then they just never recovered.
Maybe I'm taking a look at it, but yeah, I think you're right.
So let's talk about Bryant McIntosh and how. Let's just play that hypothetical, how great he would be in black and gold.
Dude, that was never going to happen.
Oh, well.
I mean, they recruited him, but there was no way his dad was going to let him go to Purdue.
Yeah, but I think he was sincerely interested. And it was, man. Although, then if you play that game, then we wouldn't have Octius, so maybe it all worked out in the end.
Is he a freshman?
McIntosh? Yeah.
Yeah. I for some reason I didn't think he was a freshman. Wow, okay.
You look pretty good.
I might rather have him than Octius just for the long term, because I'm really worried about next year's point guard situation. Especially, I mean, like offensively, defensively, I have no problem trusting Bryson, but offensively, I'm starting to think that Vince Edwards might have to be a full-time point forward.
You think that, wouldn't you?
Yes, of course. Unless Isaac Haas can do it. But I think, yeah, no, I mean, like, who else is is qualified to be the primary ball handler on the team? Like, I don't really know.
Are we gonna get into this now?
No, we're being happy. We're being happy and we're being positive.
Now we're all depressed. So thank
you. We did raid on the parade. We suck.
Everything is terrible.
No, I thought that just sealing this Northwestern win after two emotional wins was huge. And coming off of Indiana, it probably should have been even money for Purdue to lose this. And that's not an indictment of anybody. It's just that Indiana game was such an emotional high that it was so easy to see Purdue just overlooking it and looking at Ohio State, saying that's the next elite team that we're going to, or at least top half of the Big Ten team at that point, that we're going to knock off. And, I mean, even though offensively it was kind of a struggle, you know, holding Northwestern to 60 points and sealing the win on the road, it was a good job.
You know, that win against Northwestern actually gave me more optimism for, you know, the second half of the season than the OSU game, in that, I mean, it did have every makings for a trap game, and it's really easy to get up, you know, for as far as, you know, if motivation is a issue, which I think some people seem to think that could be the problem, you know, it's easy to get up for IU, it's easy to get up for you know, number 20 Ohio State at home, and Northwestern, it would be the game that would be overlooked, and I think that's an indicator that they are focused and they're taking it a game at a time.
Well, and I was impressed how they came out against Ohio State. Again, you know, when you start to win a couple games in a row, you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, right?
And I mean, I'm still waiting, right? I mean, after the Ohio State win, I'm still waiting, but yeah.
And I'm still sort of thinking that they might drop a dumb one later on this season. Who knows, right? You don't always win the games that you expect to win. But for the most part, like, they led most of the game against Ohio State. And despite some really bad free throw shooting at the end of the game, closed it out.
Yeah, it was. I never really felt like that game was in too much jeopardy, except for the last 30 seconds. you know, as my mind, you know, they're up by nine, and in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, what happens if they shoot a three? Sure enough, they nail one, and right. It was like the perfect storm, and they were able to so effectively jump back into the game. I was not feeling good just by the way that the momentum was going. I almost expected them to find a way to get on the free throw line again.
They were close.
How good is Ohio State, do you think?
They were hot coming into it. I mean, I think they were one of the hottest teams coming into it. I think they were playing great at that point.
No, I think they're really good. I mean, really good meaning I think they have a shot at going Elite Eight. D'Angelo Russell, he's so good. He's so unbelievably good. He's polished. He's smooth. He's calm under pressure. And he's got the skills to back it up. I think he's pretty phenomenal. And they were missing Mark Loving. And Mark Loving, if you don't know, was a complete scrub last year. Yeah. He shot under 28% from three-point range, and he was a shooter. And he didn't do much else. He didn't grab too many rebounds or didn't seemingly make too many plays. He was one of those guys that played for Ohio State, and you didn't notice him. This year, in the Big Ten season, I think he's shooting upwards of 60% from three-point land.
I think it's like 54%.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And he's turned into, and it's happened over a long stretch of time. So in terms of sample size for a college basketball season, it seems to be a reality. And he's a big floor spacer for that team. He was a reliable weapon, and they lost by two. And it was apparently a disciplinary issue or something like that. I think Coach Amada said he wasn't fit to wear the scarlet and gray, whatever that means.
Must have done something really bad.
Yeah. But
a lot of interesting folks have worn the scarlet and gray.
But coming into it, like the Maryland game, he scored 19. Indiana game, he scored 12. He put 10 on Iowa. He would have been a weapon. And would have spaced the floor, given D'Angelo Russell a little more area to work. And not like we held him to anything. I think he still scored 20 points, grabbed 7 boards. So, he was still working, but I think that was a huge absence. And we took advantage. Purdue absolutely took advantage, and that's to their credit.
From a matchup perspective, too, I think they match up against Purdue better than maybe Wisconsin. Besides Wisconsin, they're probably one of the toughest matchups. They're one of the few players that have a arsenal of bigs that they could put on Hammonds and Haas and at least neutralize them a little bit.
I think about the Mark Loving issue, I think it was either Painter or Katie who said that it's not always who you play, but when you play them. Mm-hmm, right?
Absolutely.
And I think Purdue has gotten some lucky breaks. In that regard, they weren't able to capitalize on that break with Illinois.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, yeah.
But with Ohio State, I mean, the win counts the same. And now they're sitting with 15 wins with 8 games left in the season, and it's not a bad position to be in.
Yeah, it's a great position to be in, especially if you think that 20-win line is something magical in terms of looking at the tournament, right?
It's not, no.
It's not, but it's nice to see. Even if we don't make the tournament, it's nice to see a 21 season again. It kind of raises the bar for recruiting. It shows that, you know, even if we didn't make it, it's probably because the conference is bad. Like, if Purdue, I think, you know, I guess we're getting into this discussion now. I think if Purdue doesn't make the tournament, it's because only 6 teams from the Big Ten go. And that's a possibility. That's a distinct possibility. I think right now Joe Lunardi and Purdue's own Jerry Palm both have us in, like, the last 4 in. So, you know, we're a solid bubble team right now.
So that gives us, if we get 20 wins, like, it's not looking at the tournament, the Big Ten tournament, but that would be 12 wins, right? 12 conference wins.
In the not counting the Big Ten tournament, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have a hard time believing that if we're in the top three or even four, which I where I think 12 would usually put us around that, at the worst, I have a hard time thinking that we wouldn't get in with that.
So Jerry Palm doesn't have us in yet.
Oh, really. Okay. I thought.
And he's looking very, very heavily on the RPI, but I think that what he's kind of overlooking is the way that the selection committee looks at trajectory and you know the second half of the season weighs a little bit more than the first half. We are a different team, and there's no way that they're going to overlook that. I mean, they're getting just looking at the national publicity they're getting now. I mean, it's pretty well established that this is not the same Purdue team that lost to Vanderbilt and Gardner-Webb.
Well, it depends on whether Purdue is able to keep it up. I mean, if Purdue goes 5-3 over the remaining eight games, then that momentum keeps up. But if they go 4-4 or 3-5. Then that momentum's not there anymore, even if the record is closer to what is normally considered NCAA tournament worthy. I really think that Gardner-Webb and North Florida are going to drag Purdue down a great deal, and it's going to be not just what Purdue does, but what the other teams on the bubble do. Right now, the other teams on the bubble are losing, and so Purdue is propagating up a little bit. But, you know, if that changes, then we could have a close competition for those last couple spots.
I think Jay said it as well. This is where that Illinois loss hurts a lot, because especially without Ravonte Rice, we hit him at the right time, and we would have been had sole possession of second place in the Big Ten right now, because Maryland's sitting at 7-3, along with Purdue right now, and Wisconsin's at 8-1. That would have been a very strong position to be in, and even that would have made it a little easier to overlook some of the non-conference wins and just say, hey, we were successful early in the season in Maui, and once Big Ten season rolled around, we got it going. That would have been the story. Right now, there isn't too much of a story other than Purdue gets hot when they're in Mackey, because the Iowa, Indiana, and Ohio State wins, which were all ranked, in the 20s, but still all ranked, were all in Mackey, and that's huge. We still don't really have a signature road win.
And we won't, unless we're able to knock off one of Indiana, Ohio State, and Michigan State. All those games are away.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like just clobbering Indiana and beating Ohio State, they're signature wins. Like those are tournament style, like the first line of your resume wins. But it'd be good if the selection committee couldn't use they play in Mackey Arena. And that's almost like where Mackey becomes a hindrance, right? Because everybody at this point knows that when Mackey is going, it's one of the toughest places. Like, it is nationally known as one of the toughest places to play. So this is why we don't really get votes. This is why Iowa and Indiana and Ohio State won't drop too much. It's, oh, they lost to Purdue at Purdue. So that's fine. So, well, you know, that's kind of the flip side of it.
And I think the other thing that hurts Purdue is, if you go back to the bad losses, if they maintain this and maybe get to 20 wins, maybe, get in that sort of 19, 20, 21 win range, the committee's going to look for excuses to not get them in the tournament, mm-hmm. right? And if you look at it right now, there are plenty of excuses to why Purdue should not be in the tournament. So yep. I have a friend who is a big Virginia Tech fan, and back when Seth Greenberg was coaching that team, they had traditionally one of the easiest non-conference schedules, and they would clean up, and then they would suck in the ACC but do just enough to sort of get to like 21 wins, right? And maybe they'd even knock off Duke, or maybe they'd knock off Duke and have 18 wins, or you know they'd sort of be in that same position, and then they would never make the tournament. And the response is always, you know, you got to win more games, right? No one's screwing you out of anything. The NCAA tournament committee is not going to screw Purdue out of a out of a tournament bid. They have wins against Ohio State. That's very nice, but now you got to turn around. You got to beat Minnesota, and you can't lose to Rutgers. And you got to look at some of these other games and say, how can we make the second half of the Big Ten season just as successful as
that? That's why I think the next three games are probably every game seems like the most important game of the season, which I think there's a lot of truth to that. But, you know, if we could beat the next three really, really winnable games, then you're looking at, like, you know, just trying to win two of the next six. So, or does it, no, maybe two of the next five, you know, after Nebraska. And that's, you know, just, you should really just win. And I think the most interesting scenario is when we, if in the hypothetical situation, we beat Minnesota, Rutgers, and Nebraska, and then we win the remaining two home games against Rutgers and Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get that 20 wins, but you're really not winning. You don't have a whole lot of quality wins within that second half of the season.
Yeah, you've got the volume, but it'd be really nice to be one of Indiana, Ohio State, or Michigan State.
And for me, it's hard. I mean, I know that there's a whole, you know, stigma of Assembly Hall, and, you know, but just the way that IU and Purdue match up right now, I know everyone's scared of IU. I'm not that scared. I think that we're capable of beating them at home. I mean, it's just,
I don't know if IU is hitting shots, yeah. Like them and Kentucky are two of those teams nationally that, you know, you want to be afraid of. They have sharpshooters that can absolutely make you pay. And that night we played them, they were cold. It was the exact night that makes people uncomfortable with relying on a jump shooting team. I don't subscribe to that. I think the three-pointer is worth an extra point, so you should take the shot. But when it's not going, teams like IU flounder, and that's exactly what happened that night. I think behind Assembly, like, you know, in front of the Assembly Hall crowd, I don't know. I think the balls will be bouncing a little more their way that night. So it'll be about establishing inside and whether Isaac Haas can play more than 8 minutes and whether Hammonds can continue to be this force.
Yeah, quick fouls on the big guys early in the game would completely change the whole tenor of that matchup against Purdue, against IU. So, and Assembly Hall is going to be as loud as Mackey was.
Yeah.
So I think that's, I sort of think that that's the first game on the 19th that a Purdue loss doesn't hurt the resume.
Well, and, you know, you just have a few games. I mean, they'll play Maryland, Michigan, and Minnesota between there. So that also, where they're sitting at, could also really dictate the game. I mean, they could be demoralized in between there. I mean, they kind of they can go up or down, but they're kind of in it's an interesting scenario.
It's a much harder stretch for them, absolutely. And the thing is, if Indiana loses two out of those three and beats Purdue, and somehow Purdue and Indiana end up being in that 5-6-7 range, like fighting for tournament spots. IU beat Butler in the offseason. IU beat Pitt in the offseason. They have very good wins. They have very good non-conference wins, and they have that one Eastern Washington loss. But other than that, their resume is a lot better than ours.
And they also have, you know, five home games, three away games the next. I mean, so
yeah, I mean,
they have a favorable schedule to them, really, overall.
They're benefiting from what we did in this stretch, what Purdue had in this stretch, which even though we had some of these ranked teams, we had them all at home together. So you know, a loss doesn't completely demoralize you because you're in front of your home crowd. As long as you don't get blown out, you're fine. And we ended up winning all three of them, plus picking up that Northwestern win. You're right. Minnesota is huge. They are a very high-scoring team. They play at a faster pace than most of the Big Ten. That's probably the Pitino influence. But I think the way that Purdue's perimeter defenders are playing, including Ray Davis, who's playing out of his mind, Bryson Scott as well on the defensive side. Offensively, we had a few people disagree, but offensively, I think he's kind of reverted to his early season mess. And Basil Smotherman on the defensive side, those three, I think, can absolutely slow down Minnesota's pace, and it could be a favorable matchup.
Yeah, so let's talk about Ray Davis for a little bit.
Yes.
He is playing amazing, and if you look at his stats this year compared to last, he's almost doubled points. He's almost doubled his assists. His shooting has improved, at least from the field, not necessarily from the three-point arc. But, I mean, he's been playing amazing lately.
Over the last four games, over this winning streak, so again, that's Iowa, Indiana, Northwestern, Ohio State. He's averaging 19.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, and, you know, couple steals, couple blocks, and two assists. He's in addition to being the leader, he's turned into probably Purdue's best perimeter player. Not probably, absolutely Purdue's best perimeter player.
Oh, he's definitely a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten. And a lot of that is due to the fact that Purdue is winning now. If Purdue had lost a couple of those close games, I don't think anyone would be talking about it. But I don't know who else I would put above
even
him.
Even, like, you know, this is such a stupid thing, but the way, you know, the NBA this last offseason did the whole who's the best two-way wing. And in the Big Ten, the conversation is Shannon Scott. And then there's a big drop-off. D'Angelo Russell is not that great on defense, and this version of Ray Davis, you know, small sample size theater alert, but this edition of Ray Davis is the best two-way player in the Big Ten.
And what's so interesting is the way he's getting his points, too.
Absolutely.
Because he's not, I mean, his shooting is, let's face it, he's not a shooter, you know, beyond 10 feet out. His efficiency when he drives reminds me, I think the last person that was able to create a shot so well in the lane is probably Etuan Moore. I mean, he's going up strong, but he's finishing, and I think that's something we haven't seen for the last two seasons is, you know, somebody that can go up there and finish with a high, you know, high efficiency.
Well, and he's picking his spots, right? Like, that was one of the things that sort of plagued him in the last 2 years is that he would pick the wrong time to attack the basket. And now he's maybe doing it in transition or...
he's not using his size either because he used to just bull rush it.
Right.
And in this last stretch, you're right, he isn't a shooter, but he's shot 4-for-7 over these last four games from three. And one of them was that huge backbreaker. I think it was in the Northwestern game, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Because it was at home.
Look at that stat for a second. 4-for-7 in four games. That's awesome. Like, he's not a great three-point shooter, but he's taking less than 2 3-pointers a game. That's perfect.
And he's nailing them, and he's making like we highlighted earlier in the season, he's making defenders at least respect his shot, and that's all you can ask. Because once you get that favorable one-on-one matchup, either once they give you a little, you know, once they take away some of that cushion, the minute they come out, Ray Davis is a good enough ball handler that he can take it straight to the hoop. There was that play right before halftime in the Ohio State game that I tweeted about, which was Bryson Scott ran into just the center of Ohio State's defense like three times and didn't go anywhere, just gave it to Ray Davis, and there were only 8 seconds left on the shot clock, and he just calmed everyone down, called for a pick, denied the pick right when the defender came up, right when his man came up to help on it and kind of force him towards the sideline, and he just blew right by him, nice, easy, comfortable, non-rushed layup. That was, I think, the best play that we've seen Ray Davis do just because of the maturity it took. And that's what happens when your leader becomes one of your best players.
And this is the same guy who's in Bryson's ear all the time, too, telling him to work on his game, listen to the coaches, be patient, he'll get his chance, and he can say with authority, you know, I was in that same position, mm-hmm. maybe not quite as bad as Bryson is right now, but in that same sort of, I'm used to doing these things in high school, I can't do these things anymore, I'm not effective, I don't know what my role is, I'm just trying to stay out there. And now he's being successful, and he's scored so much over the last four games that he's actually Purdue's leading scorer over Hammonds, which is not something I think many people saw coming.
And that's what I think makes this such a great story, is I think before the season, people were writing him off as a major contributor. And you know, and that's Purdue fans typically get very excited with the new and tend to look at the freshmen and kind of forget about who's on the roster. But there were plenty of people writing him off saying, you know, he's a good leader, but he'll just be kind of come off the bench and provide a spark every now and then.
I was definitely one of those people. I was absolutely one of those people. I didn't see him
having this kind
of. I know. I didn't see him having this kind of a stretch in him. From the leadership perspective, I did, I think most people who have paid attention to the Purdue program have just been in love with his attitude, like from the time he got on campus. But there was a stretch last year where it was bad. I mean, it was really bad. And all of a sudden, we're counting on this guy to lead us? Like, it's, you know, it didn't make much sense. And now, both him and AJ are dominating. He's taking the scoring load. And AJ, I'm almost positive, in the second half of the Iowa game and in the second half of the Ohio State game, AJ didn't have a field goal attempt.
Right.
He didn't shoot. Not that he didn't make one. He didn't shoot. And we still won because these perimeter players are taking some of the load off. And the other thing is that in the last four games during this win streak, Vince Edwards and Kendall Stevens and Dakota Mathias haven't been that great.
Well, and one final thing on Ray Davis before we talk about that, because I think that's important. But I think Purdue fans got sick of hearing this, but Painter would often say that Purdue needs to get old. Right. And what Ray Davis is doing is an example of what happens when you let players get old within your system. You know, some of them never learn. Some of them are like a Marchuch, who's the same guy every year.
How dare you besmirch the name of Sandy Marchuch.
Sandy. I'm so sorry, Sandy. I was just really nervous whenever you played. But Ray Davis, you know, he's matured within the system. He knows what his coaches want of him, and that's the fact that he's in his third year, and it's starting to pay dividends.
And before we transition, he can also hit free throws. I'm telling you, having somebody, you know, that can shoot better than 60%, it's a real nice change of pace.
You know what's funny about that is he's only shooting 75%. From the free throw line, which is not bad at all. Like, I'll take
That's fine. But
normally when you're talking about, like, really good free throw shooters, you're like, yeah, you know, he shoots 90% or 87%. No, he's, like, 75%, and we're like, he is a free throw god. Get him out on the court.
I mean, he's been awesome.
To use a segue, to me, it's crazy that – so Kendall Stevens shoots – I know last year he was almost at 90%. This year he's at 72%. But it just – he just has the knack of missing, like, the most important free throws. It drives me nuts. It's like I can guess when he's going to miss it.
He at least made one of them, though.
Yeah.
Like, that was huge. And he is just off this year. I don't know what's going on.
I think it's the injury. I really do think.
And I get that he broke his pinky or he hurt his finger, but it looks like it's his body language. He's playing lazy. It just, I don't understand it. He's not himself.
I've actually noticed that from both him and my dude, Vince Edwards. I mean, you know, Vince puts up enough stats that people like me kind of give him a pass, but he's been pretty invisible. And it was at some times just like flat out bad offensively, like where he would just make these lazy passes. His dribble wouldn't be that tight to the ground. Like he'd just be, it looks like he's playing in a pickup game sometimes. And that's, to me, that's been the best part of this stretch, is that we don't have our two of our three probably most talented players on their game. And so I do think if they show up, it's, this team can get a lot better.
I think they can get a lot better, but I don't know. I think Vince Edwards, I give him a little bit of a pass because he disappears at times, but he does produce, like you said, and he's always sort of had that easy flow kind of game to him, you know. Sure. Kendall Stevens, it's bothersome to watch him at times because he is by far, by a country mile, Purdue's worst entry passer, and might be Purdue's worst passer in general, because he just, there's no crispness to his passes. He telegraphs them. They get deflected or picked off all the time, and it's really frustrating to watch because it's wonderful to watch him hit a three-pointer, right? That's great. But then on the next possession when he throws the ball away and they get an easy two, you know, the value he's adding is not 3 points, it's only one.
Yeah, I was just telling a friend that it's like when he doesn't – it's like when he gets the ball and he pump fakes and he doesn't shoot a three, then it's like, uh-oh. Because then the decision afterward, I'd almost rather just shoot an ill-advised shot than – try to make a decision, because he, even the simple pass of getting it back to the point guard, it seems to be a stretch for him.
But I don't think it's I don't think it's like a inability to do it. You know what I mean? I think it's just not executing.
He's thinking about it
correctly. I don't know. Like it's just.
And the same with Dakota Mathias. I mean, he's shooting his 30% right now from the three. And I think if there's anybody that I think is capable of shooting out of their slump, you know, they'll start to drop.
That's kind of what Painter said, right? He's, as long as they're pulling up with confidence and doing it in the flow of the game, he's okay with those two shooting. I don't know. Maybe they just have to see their shooters. They have to see if you go in. But it's kind of frustrating.
You know what, Mathias's value, though, I think you won't really see in the box score. I mean, I think he's getting much better at kind of managing the game when the ball's in his hand. I feel, you know, he doesn't turn it over a lot, and he just makes really good decisions.
I have to say, I wasn't always the highest on him, on Mathias, but he's been impressive lately.
I think that's true when he's in the backcourt with John Octius. Mm-hmm. When Ohio State got their went on their run, I think it was with about 5 minutes left to play in the second half. We played a backcourt of Bryson Scott and Dakota Mathias. Then we played Vince Edwards and Basil Smotherman. And then we had one of our centers. I think it was Haas for most of that time. Nobody can score in that lineup. There is no go-to scorer when Mathias Mathias's shot isn't going in. And they know that, so they'll just double down on Haas every time. They'll give perimeter plays the space, and they'll just back off. So somebody in that lineup has to start stepping up. Otherwise, at least two starters have to be on the floor at all times. And that really hurts you at the end of games when you need your best players. So I think that's tough. But then on the flip side, I think Basil Smotherman's been playing his best out. I mean, his play has made up for those two shooters not playing well. He hustles, he gets steals, like he gets his hand in passing lanes. He doesn't make a mistake. Like, that's one thing. He doesn't ever make mistakes on the fast break.
Yeah.
Like, that is one thing I've noticed.
Good. He's so good on the fast break.
You always forget how athletic he is.
Oh, he's so good. And it just his frame. His frame is so long. It's just such a Gumby frame.
He looks like a basketball player, right?
He looks like he belongs on the court, except for the fact that when he has the ball, he has no idea what to do. But that's improved. You know, recently that's improved, and that's okay. It's step by step. But he, I mean, like, you know, his defense along with this little stretch has been.
And can you imagine if he could consistently knock down a three? His value would just skyrocket. I mean,
so I mean, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here, but I think that he could be like a breakout player within the next 2 years. You know what I mean? Like,
I wrote that a year ago.
He has everything.
I wrote that like 2 years ago.
I wrote that like 4 years ago.
Sorry.
I think, yeah, no, I agree. He has all the tools. He really does. And he seems to be one of those guys that'll work hard. Like, I mean, you know, especially with Ray Davis kind of pushing him.
So before we end this, how are we all feeling about Purdue basketball? I mean, things have really changed quite a bit over the last couple of weeks.
You know, I was feeling good until we started recording this podcast. And you guys successfully brought me down again, so thanks.
I think it's great. I mean, for somebody like me who still thinks Coach Painter is the guy to take us, you know, to man this program, I think these last 2 weeks have been great. They've shown that he hasn't lost it. I think he has made some significant strides in some of his substitution patterns. Some of his lineups aren't great. Some of the out of bounds stuff isn't ideal. But I do think that he gets these guys ready to play and ready to play extremely talented teams. And when somebody like Iowa or Indiana or Northwestern can't match up with Purdue's size, he knows where to go. And then at this point, A.J. Hammons has developed to a spot where you can trust him to make the right play, whether that's passing it out to the open man and getting kind of a hockey assist or just taking it up strong and not bringing the ball down. In the last week, it's made me feel a lot better about A.J. Hammons and Matt Painter, I think.
I think when he trusts his players, it's a completely different. You can tell when he doesn't trust players because he subs them in and out all the time. He goes 9 or 10 deep with a bunch of guys that, you know, it's just ugly basketball. But he's starting to get to the point where he trusts guys like Ray Davis and Hammons and Octius, and we're seeing the rewards of that. So
you guys feel good. That's good.
Feel good. I'm feeling good. I am feeling good. It's fun to watch Purdue basketball games again, and that makes me happy.
That Ohio State game, I haven't had so much fun. That Ohio State game was more fun to me than the Indiana game. The Indiana game was just like a giant, I can't probably say what it was, on this family program. But it was, you know, it was kind of a foregone conclusion. This Ohio State game, like, they came back, they punched back, and Purdue stood up and took it and got the win. And Mackey was rocking. I mean, that was the best Mackey crowd. That was better than the Indiana crowd, I think. I don't know. I mean, like, that Ohio State game was the most fun I've had watching Purdue basketball in a long time.
Well, let's hope they can keep it up. But thanks, everyone, for listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat.